Hello, everybody. Welcome and thank you for coming. My name is Reem Ramawi, and I'm the president of Students for Justice in Palestine here at UNO. I would like to introduce David Sheen, a Canadian-Israeli independent journalist and filmmaker. Sheen began blogging when he first moved to Israel in 1999 and has written for many publications, including Al Jazeera, Huffington Post, and The Daily Beast. He has spoken throughout the U.S., Canada, and Europe, and is currently writing a book about African immigrants to Israel and the struggles that they face. Welcome to David Sheen.
Thank you so much for coming. People who weren't able to come out tonight will be able to see this material. And of course, I'm also going to be adding URLs so that when you see some of this stuff, you may find it hard to believe. You'll be able to go onto the internet afterwards and look this stuff up and verify. With the title that I've chosen, The Bullet, The Ballot, and The Boycott, people generally assume that I'm going to be speaking about boycotting Israel. But in fact, I'm not going to be speaking about boycotting Israel. I'm going to be speaking about Israel boycotting. Because I contend that Israel actually boycotts its own non-Jewish citizens in many facets of life. I've only been talking about what's happening inside pre-1967 Israel. Because there's this discourse of liberal Zionists, and when the idea of boycotting Israel comes up, you know, then they're quick to jump in and say, wait a minute, that's not fair. It's not fair to boycott Israel, because if you're opposed to what Israel's doing in the territories, then you should boycott the territories. You should boycott the settlements. You should boycott goods and services that come out of the settlements. But don't boycott Israel. That's a separate entity altogether. Fine. In the West Bank, that's non-democratic Israel. But in the rest of the country, that's democratic Israel. Those are two separate entities. Now, of course, it's completely ridiculous. This is an artificial separation that has no basis in reality, right? That's so-called democratic Israel, where Palestinian people are boycotted. This is what I'm trying to explain to you, that Israel isn't a democracy, that in my mind it's an ethnocracy, and that the rights and privileges are not accorded to people on the basis of citizenship, but on the basis of their ethnicity. Just to bring you up to speed, because some people have been following this African refugee issue for a while, and I want them to have the most up-to-date information. So, as in the case of Palestinian people, the Supreme Court, its job most often is to launder the worst excesses of the state, and so it does in the case of African refugees, and so it says no, okay? These people have done nothing wrong. They've committed no crime. There is no just basis for holding them in this jail indefinitely. And so it demands that the government release these people at least after a year. If they've sat in this desert detention center for a year or longer, then it orders the government to release them. And grudgingly, the government does so. But it says, okay, we're forced to release these people onto the streets. Well, they won't go onto the streets of Tel Aviv or Eilat. These are the two towns that have the highest concentration of African people, and this is where their families are. This is where their friends are. They've been released from jail, and now this is their support system. But they are not allowed to go to those cities because Israel declares them to be sundown towns. Have you heard of this phrase, sundown town? Well, this is part of American history, and it was quite common down here in the South, but not only, also up in the North. It was just one of the many ways that white supremacists in the United States kept out people of color from their communities. There's lots of different ways that this was done, but one of the ways was declaring your town to be a sundown town, meaning having a sign at the entrance to town saying, if you're not white, you better get the hell out of town by sundown, or else we will physically make you do so. And so this is what's happened in Israel. The government has declared Tel Aviv and Eilat to be sundown towns. And not to be outdone, we have Israeli mayors picking up the gauntlet and running with it. And so now, no, they're saying, no, my town too, we're also a sundown town. So when these African refugees are released and now they have to figure out where to go, they can't go here, they can't go there, where are they going to go? Where are they going to find a place to sleep that night and not sleep on the street? So Israeli mayors say, no, I won't allow infiltrators to reach Arad. I ordered city police to augment forces at the entrance to town. I call upon everyone to be watchful. I won't hesitate to call on all residents to fight. And he posts police at the entrance to town to ensure that no Africans enter town. And he wasn't the only one. It was also the mayor of Beit She'an who did the exact same thing. And this is what it looked like in the United States to have these signs at the entrance to town in yesteryear. Of course, sometimes it was out and obvious like this, but there were also incidences in the U.S. where the same effect was achieved, but through more subtle means. And so sometimes they would have illustrations such as these in public places, and the same message was conveyed. The idea here is this is like a black donkey, so the idea was get your black ass out of town. That was the message that was supposed to be conveyed. We don't want any people of color in our town. Now, speaking of black donkeys, I'm going to speak a little bit about another episode in Israeli history, because when I speak about Israel's treatment of African refugees, you know, I often hear a response from audience members, something along the lines of, but how can Israel be racist if there are black Jews? And, you know, Israel went to Africa and took black people out of Africa, not to be slaves, but to be free. And as if, you know, the existence of black Jews means that Israel can't be raised. But okay, let's work with that. You know, because, you know, let's look at that story, because actually the first part is completely correct. Israel did, in the 1980s, take these jumbo jets, remove the seats from them, and it flew them into Ethiopia, and it loaded up the planes with Ethiopian Jews, and it flew them back to Israel, and they've been living in Israel ever since, as citizens of the state. So that part of the story is absolutely correct, okay? But, and it's a big but, when I look at these photos, I have to ask the question, why are they in color? Did you ever wonder that? Because, let's face it, this is 1984, Israel was established in 1948. What took all this time? I mean, all the Iraqi Jews were brought to Israel in the early 50s. All the Yemeni Jews were brought to Israel in the early 1950s, right? Israel didn't have relations with any of those countries, yet somehow it managed to bring those Jews into Israel in the first few years following the establishment of the state. Why did it take so long to bring these sub-Saharan African Jews into the country? A little suspicious. Well, I did a little bit of digging, and, you know, when you ask Israeli government officials this, they'll say something like, oh, the political conditions didn't allow for it. We weren't able at that time, geopolitically, to, you know, carry out an operation like that. But I found out that, in actual fact, over 10 years earlier, the Israeli government did carry out an almost identical operation. So how can you say you couldn't have done it? Over 10 years earlier, in 1972, turns out, the Israeli government sent, just as they did then, jumbo jets into Ethiopia. They flew into Ethiopia, they landed in the Ethiopian desert, in the Afari region of the country, and they loaded Ethiopians on board on these planes, and they brought them back to Israel, and they've been living in Israel ever since. Except, those Ethiopians they brought on board were not Ethiopian Jews. They weren't Ethiopian Christians either. In fact, they weren't Ethiopian humans of any kind. They were Ethiopian donkeys, if you can imagine that. Now, why would Israel conduct a military operation to bring donkeys from Ethiopia before they would bring Ethiopian Jews? Well, it's because of this man. He was, I guess you could say, a pioneer of the conservation movement in Israel. He had a vision. He wanted to create a nature reserve for animals that were, you know, nearing extinction, or that it was feared that they would soon become extinct. And he wanted to provide a safe space where they could roam free. But he had an ulterior motive. His vision was to look at the Bible, look at the Torah and the Talmud, and to jot down the names of the different animals that existed in the time of the Bible. And then, since they no longer existed in the country, to find at least their descendants somewhere, and then bring them back to the country. His idea was, if we repopulate the country with the flora and the fauna that existed in the time of the Bible, then that would lend legitimacy to the Zionist narrative, you know? Just as the land looks like it once did in the time of the Bible, so should it be ruled by the same people that did so in the time of the Bible. So this was his vision, and so he convinces the Israeli government to spend $500,000 in today's dollars to purchase these donkeys and have them flown over from Ethiopia. So Israel was willing to bring Ethiopian donkeys, but it wasn't willing to bring Ethiopian Jews. We know this. First of all, those donkeys still actually exist in Israel. I visited them and till this day. And if not them, then their descendants. But at that time, though they brought in the donkeys, they wouldn't bring in the humans. They refused to. And it was for racist reasons. And we know this because at that time Israel had an ambassador in Ethiopia. In fact, here is that ambassador, Hanani Nor, presenting his credentials to Haile Selassie, the emperor of Ethiopia, right? And we read the writings of Hanani Nor, and he writes back, you know, he has communication with his fellow Israeli envoys around the world. And we see at that time that if an Ethiopian Christian wanted to fly to Israel to do a religious pilgrimage, to see where Jesus walked, you know, then you would just go into the Israeli embassy in Addis and get a stamp on your passport and off you go. No questions asked, no problem. But if you were a Jewish person in Ethiopia, and for the same reason you wanted to see where Moses walked or where Joshua walked or whatever, and you wanted to make a religious pilgrimage to Israel, then you said, okay, yeah, we'll give you a visa to go there, but you have to pay $600. And if it isn't already obvious, $600 is way, way more than any Ethiopian could have afforded at that time, Jew, Christian, or otherwise. So in this way, the purpose of charging Jews for the right to visit was in order to ensure that none of them would, because none of them could. And that was the whole point. And in his writings, we see Hanani Nor saying that if we allowed them to visit, it would raise hopes of immigrating. Thousands of primitive, illiterate, sick, oppressed people will never have capacity for. So they didn't want the black Jews to visit because they didn't want the black Jews to stay because they didn't want black Jews. Okay, so let's dispense with this idea that Israel is, you know, loves black people and wants black people to come there. The only reason Israel ever changed its policy and decided in the end, in the 1980s, to bring Ethiopian Jews is actually because of the endless efforts of American Jews who started up these organizations to pester the Israeli government, and it lobbied them for years and years, and it protested them, and it raised a ruckus, and finally, after a long, long, long protracted battle, they managed to convince the government. But the reason why these American Jews did so, I mean, perhaps at least in part, you know, because they were also disgusted by the racist implications of keeping up black people, but also for their own, you know, for their own reasons, because at that time, we're talking the mid-1970s, right? That's exact. In fact, right now we're talking about the 40th anniversary. It's been exactly 40 years since, in the United Nations, the General Assembly passed a resolution declaring that Zionism is a form of racism, saying that the Israeli regime is racist towards non-Jewish people. So because these American Jewish Zionists wanted to protect Israel from these accusations of racism, they thought that if you bring black Jews to Israel, then it would protect it, and then other people wouldn't be able to accuse it of racism anymore. In other words, the very reason that these black Jews were brought to Israel to begin with is in order to blackwash the state of Israel. And Ethiopian Israelis are not stupid. They realize this, they know this, okay? And they're mad as hell. And in recent months, we have Ethiopian Israelis taking to the streets and protesting and demanding an end to state-sanctioned racism against them, demanding an end to police violence against their community, stopping 10 lanes of traffic. It's kind of Israel's Black Lives Matter moment. And, you know, it was pretty exciting, actually, especially because there was so much solidarity. You know, we saw multi-gender, multi-generational young people, old people coming out, because everyone knows about it. It's not like you need to convince anyone to come out of their house, because if it isn't you being beaten down by the cop, it's your uncle or your cousin or your brother or your friend. Everyone has experienced this to some degree. And so people have, you know, in recent months coming out demanding an end. Of course, protests against racist police brutality then were met by racist police brutality. Of course, it's not nearly as bad as what Palestinian people face when they protest, but certainly significantly worse than what white Israelis experience when they go to the streets. But those white Israelis didn't seem to really take much, you know, didn't really seem to be moved by it. In fact, the response from society was rather lackluster. What are these people even complaining about? You know, and in fact, that was the response of the government as well. The government said that the police handled these protests impeccably, and the police said, oh, we looked into these accusations that we're discriminating against black people, but we've investigated and we've revealed no evidence of discrimination or rights violations. Even the single solitary Ethiopian Israeli member of the Knesset, if you can imagine this, voted against a state inquiry into state racism against Ethiopians.